is a kind word, all that sort of thing. Before I start to talk, I'm going to say something. I was up in Tennessee not long ago and got a hold of some copies of the original manuscript copy of the big book. And since that was written when they mimeographed 400 copies of them, sent them out and for approval from different people, alcoholics and non-alcoholics alike. And as a result of that book, which was printed when Alcoholics Anonymous was called the Alcoholic Foundation, Alcoholics Anonymous got its name from that book. Seven of the steps have been changed. Bill Wilson added four paragraphs to his story, and where he says, "Since then, I have not had a drink," he moved that down a paragraph. And at the end of how it works, where now we have, we are now at the third step. It's a being convinced we are at the third step. In that book, it says, if you are not convinced at this point, reread the book or else throw it away. And there's quite a few things in there that you'd be interested in if you're a student of the big book. It's only for study, for those who are interested in how AA was in the very beginning. And if you'd like to get one, see me after the meeting. They're $10. My name is Charles Lindenwood, and I'm an alcoholic. I certainly appreciate being asked to come down here. Thank you, Lou, very much. And thank you, my friend. When I come down here, I always have to mention Ken's name, because he gave me $5 if I mention his name. Last time I was down, I didn't mention his name, and I didn't get $5. Anyway, tonight, I'm going to talk about the prayer that we all pray after each meeting. Now, in some places where you go and they say the prayer, you noticed I said, say the prayer. They seem to be trying to outdo one another to see who can get through the quickest. And they don't even pronounce the words very clearly or distinctly. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we say each word clearly and distinctly, and we pronounce it so that God can understand it, just as if God had never heard it before. Some of us who have learned this prayer at our mother's knee when we were children, we find that now it has a different meaning altogether than it did then, because then we were repeating the Lord's Prayer. Now we are praying the Lord's Prayer, or the Our Father, if you choose to call it that. We have other prayers in AA. There's the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer. In the big book, on page 76, where it explains the seventh step, that's nothing but a prayer. One short paragraph is the seventh step, and it's a prayer. And we have the serenity prayer. The serenity prayer is the prayer that we pray when our load becomes too heavy for us to bear. And whether you've been sober for a month or a year or 10 years, sometimes your load gets too heavy for you to bear. Because you're going to have problems as long as you live. The tenth step says, when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. It don't say if we were wrong. You're going to be wrong. You're going to make mistakes. Temptation will always be with you. Don't go giving away my seat. You've got to watch this guy. And I'm sure that when you first came to Alcoholics Anonymous and you heard the Serenity Prayer, you thought it was one of the most beautiful works you'd ever read. I did. And I thought that might be easy enough for God to grant me serenity, and I didn't even know what serenity meant. Serenity means peace of mind. And then wisdom to know the difference. That was the catcher. To have wisdom to know the difference. To know what you really have been saved for. We all know that we've been saved for some purpose. We know that. We know that God didn't bring us this far just to turn us loose. And some of us are still searching for the reason and the explanation of the Serenity Prayer as it applies to us. But if you're patient and stay sober, you're going to find out. You're going to find serenity. You're going to find peace of mind. And at whatever level you may be, whatever rung of the ladder of life you may be on now, and you're not satisfied with your position as it exists now, fret not. You're going to get better. It keeps getting better and better until you think it couldn't get any better, and then it gets better and continues to get better. The promises that you find on page 83 in the big book. Tell us about what's going to happen. When I stood with the men in Alcoholics Anonymous, for the first few times, I knew that there was something more to this prayer than I had ever heard or felt. The sincerity with which you prayed this prayer, the feeling that came from you, I knew that I was in a place and I had a seat reserved that nobody else could fill but me. I've been cast out. I've been rejected. I've been told that I was no longer wanted or needed. I've been fired and told to leave Arkansas. I came from Arkansas by request. And that tells you something about the shape I was in. Well, I was so dumb, I couldn't retain the whole prayer. And a fellow told me one time, he says, why don't you just separate it and break it down so that you can understand it, study it. And that's what I did. I broke the Our Father down into 12 parts. And the first part of this prayer is Our Father. Well, if God is our Father, and we say this with sincerity, God is your Father and He's my Father too. He's our Father. And if God is our Father, yours and mine, this establishes a relationship between you and me and God Almighty. And with that power behind you, with God as your partner, your friend, in this program, in the final analysis, this program is between you and God. You have a lot of sponsors. You have a lot of friends. You have a lot of people in that AA that you trust. But in the final analysis, this is between you and God. That's why everybody is an entity in AA. That's why we who have come from all faith, from all walks of life, from all creeds, can receive this program in its entirety and know that we have received it. And it's free. There's no obligation. The only obligation we have is to share our experience, our strength, and our hope for the next alcoholic that comes through that door, the next person that sits next to it. Sometimes all we need to do to share is just a smile, a handshake, just a feeling of cordiality. There's some people you're automatically drawn to. Some people make you AA makes you happy. Some people make you happy just by coming into the room. Others make you happy by leaving the room. Because we never will find somebody that we agree with completely. Never. Your mother didn't agree with you completely. You didn't agree with your mother completely. Or your father, or your brothers, or your sisters. And here in this fellowship of siblings, you won't agree with everyone. You won't agree completely with anyone. But this teaches you patience and tolerance in your family. When you're talking to your brothers or your cousins, I had brothers that didn't understand me and I didn't understand. I had cousins that, they wouldn't even have anything to do with me in later life. I had an uncle, I had a favorite uncle, and I had a favorite aunt. But they were still my family, those that I didn't care as much for as others. And you find it that way in AA. Sometimes when I introduce myself, I say my name is Charles Lindenwood, and I'm an alcoholic, and people say, "Hi, Charles," and I say, "Hi, family," because you are my family. You're the only family that God has given me because I was rejected by my family and by my peers, and I was running, trying to escape reality through the media of alcohol. So you are indeed my siblings, my brothers and my sisters, for I can truly say our Father. Now we've established to whom we are praying. Now, where is it? It's in heaven, which art in heaven. That's where he is. And I remember when I first started studying this prayer, I said, well, he's a long way off from me. He's in heaven and I'm here in Washington, D.C. in a flop house. And I didn't think he visited flop houses. I didn't think that God visited me. I thought God was angry with me, and he was justified in his anger because I had broken his rules and man's law. I broke every one of the 12 steps. I mean the 10 commandments. I didn't break no 12 steps. You can't break them. But I broke every one of the 10 commandments except one. And that was the one where it says that you ain't supposed to crave no images, or carve no images. But I would have if I could have made a profit at it and had the skill to do it. And I'm sure that we all tried everything that we knew how to try. But this business about God being in heaven, did you ever think about the astronaut that went up to the moon and took pictures of the earth? And there the earth was sitting out there, where? In the heaven. Nothing supporting it. It was just out there, a big ball in the heaven, like we see the moon from here. The moon is a part of the heaven. So we find out that the earth is a part of the heavens, a part of the universe. And God is here, and He's on the moon. He's everywhere. So we said, "Thy kingdom come." When you say "Thy kingdom come," that's sort of like God's kingdom is going to come if you just be patient. Thy will be done. That's sort of like saying, well, God's will is going to be done. Like if we be patient, these things would happen. But I'm going to come back to that. That's part four of the Lord's Prayer. And I'm going to come back to that in a little bit, and I'll remind you of this because it tells you about that. Like the tenth step sort of confirms the fourth step in our program of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. Incidentally, our program is a program of recovery, but you do not recover from alcoholism. You can get rid of the alcohol, but you can't get rid of the ism. The program tells us that, I think it's on page 20 in the big book, it says that we recover from a hopeless, helpless condition of mind and body. And that's what we recover from. But once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. You find that on page 21 in the big book. Thy will be done. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Well, we know that the earth is a part of the universe. And we know that God created this universe. And we know that God created us. We know that we are all God's children. We've been taught that since we were old enough to learn. And if you're one of God's children, what makes you created in His image? Intelligence. You see, God gave you a choice. You can go out of here tonight and do good or do bad. God gave you a mind, intelligence, to use, and He gave it to you, and He loves you and trusts you so much that He don't take it away from you, even when you do wrong. He gives you and lets you keep that choice, unless you lose your mind altogether. If you lose your mind altogether, then God takes over. God takes care of fools and drunks and little children. But I don't see any little children in here, and I don't see any fools, and I don't see any drunks. You may have been drunk, and I'm sure we all understand about that. But God gave you intelligence, and I believe that if you ask me for a description of God, I would tell you God is intelligent. And that's the only way I can see that God could be everywhere. That's the only way that I could see that God could make a flea or a butterfly or a worm or you. Now they're even making spare parts for us. God has given intelligence to so many people, and He's made a lot of people that we can't understand why God would cause them to haul away garbage, or why we would have some people that would be physicians, other people to be printers, stenographers, and different things. Why wouldn't He give everybody the same amount of intelligence and the same capability? If He did, who would haul off the garbage? If all the preachers would go on strike next week, and all the garbage men would go on strike next week, who do you think they'd call back first? Well, I'm not trying to be facetious, it's practical. And did you ever think of these people that get up on these hot roofs and put this hot tar up on these roofs in the summertime? Did you ever think, my, I hate to do that. And you see those people and they got this mop dipping in them, swinging that hot tar around, and they're just as happy. One of the happiest men I ever knew in my life was a man who dug ditches, and he kept his shovel so clean and so sharp on the end, and he could dig a ditch so that it wouldn't cave in and that it would slope so perfectly that no water would accumulate and mosquitoes couldn't breed in it. And when he would come home at night, he'd bring his shovel with him. And he would sing, he was proud. He was one of God's children, one of God's happy children. He had found peace of mind. He had found what we're seeking. Search for Serenity is one of the best books that we have around Alcoholics Anonymous. You can open that book anywhere and start reading it and find something that will suit you to a T. Because we are prone to have more than one common denominator. We all have a common denominator of alcohol. But what are the other common denominators? Loneliness is one. We've all known loneliness. There may be people in this room right tonight who feel lonely in this crowded room. You can go to a theater and feel lonely in the theater. I felt lonely in the bosom of my own family. We've known loneliness. We've known hurt and rejection. These are common denominators of the alcoholic. And when you talk to one another, you feel this. You feel that you're understood. And you don't have to go into detail about these things, because the spirituality of this program is in you, and you, it's in all of us. Give us this day our daily bread. What is our daily bread? What are we asking God to give us? If you're a hippie, bread is money. You don't even have to be a hippie sometimes for bread to be money. But if you're a pregnant woman, your bread for today is that your baby will be born whole, sound of mind, and with all its fingers and toes, and have good eyesight and be intelligent and be presentable. If a man is in jail, his bread is freedom. Anybody in jail wants out. That's the prisoner's bread for today. Maybe your bread for today is just that your little boy will get a bicycle that he wants so much. Maybe you're saving money for that. Maybe it's that your little girl will get a dress to graduate in June, next June. Whatever it is, don't ever allow yourself to think for 1 minute that your needs are so insignificant that God hasn't got time to listen to your prayer. God hears every prayer that you ever say. God has heard every prayer that you've ever prayed. Sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes it's wait. Sometimes it's yes, and it's answered immediately. But God knows of your needs, and He will supply them. Everybody can't own a yacht. Everybody can't take world trips. Everybody can't furnish the things for their children that they would like for them to have. Everybody can't attend college. But everybody's needs are furnished then by your Heavenly Father. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. I used to ride the rails a lot. I was a railroad bum, and I thought that meant trespassing. When I trespass against any of these railroads, Southern Pacific, Missouri Pacific, Union Pacific, Northern Pacific, didn't make any difference. I'd get arrested. I'd do time for trespassing. Sometimes it's hard to forgive those who trespass. The word trespass means sin. Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. But there's a key word in that. And that key word is a conjunction. Two letters. As. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those. We've got to forgive first. We've got to love in order to be loved. We've got to stick our hand out if we want to meet people. We've got to smile if we want people to smile back at us. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. An alcoholic can't afford to have a resentment. You can't afford to hate. Love is permeating this room right here tonight. You love those people around you. And sometimes before you know you're capable of love. I thought that I was incapable of love. I thought I hated everybody and wished there was more of them. And all the time I was wanting to be loved. Wanting to be needed. Wanting to belong. Wanting to be accepted. And in Alcoholics Anonymous was the first place that I had ever been in my life. And to this day, it still is. I can go to any city, anywhere, and walk into an AA group and know that I'm understood, that I belong, that I'm accepted, and that God lives there. When I was on the bum, a great many times I'd stand outside of churches, great, beautiful buildings, and I'd want to go in because I'd always been taught that this was God's house. I wanted to go in and find that peace because I'd hurt so deeply. And my pride wouldn't let me tell anybody how I hurt and how lonely I was. I remember one time in Jackson, Mississippi. I got so hungry that I went in this church. Great big church. Beautiful church. She went in. She said, just a minute. She went into his office in the inner sanctorium. And I heard some mumbling in there, and he said, who? And then she came out, and she looked at me and said, he said, come right in. I went in, and I told him that I was a long way from home, and I'd been riding a freight train, and I wondered if he could spare me the price of something to eat. He wrote down something on a piece of paper, put it in an envelope, and sealed the envelope, and he said, take this to this little corner sandwich place, and he'll take care of it. Well, I got down and I handed this fellow behind the counter this envelope, and he opened it and read it and looked at me, and he said, do you know what this says? And I said, no, I don't. The Reverend gave this to me, but he didn't tell me what was in it. He read it to me, and it said, give this man 15 cents worth of food. He gave me as much as I could eat. And it reminded me of the time this man went to heaven and he was talking to St. Peter, and St. Peter says, why do you think I should let you into heaven? What have you ever done good? He said, well, one time I was betting on a horse and I caught the late final, and I bought a paper for a nickel from a little boy, and I opened and saw that my horse had won, and I folded up the paper and gave it back to the little boy. St. Peter looked over at his secretary. Name was Rose. He said, Rose, look this up. She looked it up, said, he sure did. He did that. St. Peter says, is there anything else that you did good? He said, yes. He says, I recall one time I was in a good mood, and a lady got on the bus that I was riding, and she was an old lady, and the bus driver had to help her on the bus. And she fished around in her pocketbook and couldn't find a dime for her fare. And I gave her 10 cents to drop in the box. St. Peter said, Rose, look that up. Rose said, he did that. He sure did. St. Peter said, I'm not going to make a judgment in this case. Rose, I'm going to let you do that. What do you think I ought to do? Rose said, I think you ought to give me 15 cents back and tell him to go to hell. I have an idea God's got a sense of humor. If he didn't have, I'm sure we wouldn't be here, you and I. Because the things that we did in our time, the things that we don't talk about to anybody else but other alcoholics, and when we do talk about them, we laugh. We laugh about things that would drive other people crazy. And the weird things that we did, we laugh about these things. When I make an ordinary talk, the talk I usually make, that's about all I talk about. And people laugh, and I laugh too. We're a bunch of weirdos. We have to admit that we're powerless, and powerless means without power. It's only after we come into Alcoholics Anonymous and accept God as a part of our lives that we get that power. If God be with you, who can be against you? Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Can you, by any stretch of the imagination, think that your God, who is perfect, would lead you into temptation? Uh-uh. Let's read that a little bit differently. Lead us, period, not into temptation. Temptation always will be with you, and God will always be with you. You got a choice. There we get back to that business of being created in God's image. And the thing that makes you in God's image is the intelligence, the choice. You can follow temptation, or you can follow God's will for you. And you've known ever since you were a child, right from wrong. Always you've known that. You know it now. And when you do something wrong, you get this feeling within your heart, and your heart goes kaboom, 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 kaboom. You know what that is? That's victory drum. And if you follow this feeling, you'll be doing right. Lead us not into temptation. I remember I'd been sober just long enough to get out of the flop house and get me a $3 a week hall room with a chair painted on the wall. Ooh, I was a big shot, getting up in the world. I invited folks over to see my residence. And it had a sloping ceiling. It was way up at the top of the house. It had a sloping ceiling. And about 3-4 times a week when I'd get up, I'd bump my head on the ceiling because it sloped down that way. And I was down the street, and I had some folding money in my pocket. You know how when before you get a billfold, you fold it this way and then over this way and put it in with the sharp side down so it won't work out, and you can feel anybody trying to get down in there to get it. Maybe you never had that experience. Anyway, I'm standing in front of a liquor store, and it's all lit up, and this display was beautiful. And old Temptation said, "Why don't you go in there and get you a bottle, Charlie? Won't nobody know it." And Conscience spoke up and said, "If you go in there and get a bottle, everybody will know it, including the judge." Temptation don't quit. Temptation said, "That bourbon, you know that bourbon in them round shouldered bottles?" Old Temptation said, "Look at that bourbon." Said, "Don't you know that'll make you feel good? Don't you know you'll get comfortable if you get one then?" And Temptation kind of backed off, and Conscience said, "Yes, you get so comfortable you can't move." And then that bottle of Dixie Belle gin had an advertisement where it had a gin fizz with celery and other stuff mixed up in it. It was just effervescent. Somebody put some of that that water, you know, that water that some people put in. The only mixed drink I ever had was take rub-a-dub in my mouth and hold it till the saliva diluted it. But anyway, old Temptation says, "Woo, wouldn't that taste good going down?" And Conscience spoke up right away and said, "Yeah, but think how it would taste coming up in long green strings." Conscience won that battle, thank God, and I walked away. "Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom." This is the 10th part of the 12 parts of the Lord's Prayer. "For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory." Remember I told you back in the 4th part where it says, "Thy kingdom come," like it would come if you'd be careful and do right and all that sort of jazz. We've been living in God's kingdom all the time, and we're saved. "For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory." When we say power, sometimes when we kind of have been in AA and everything's going right, our job is secure and our wives are letting us sleep in the right bed, and the dog quit growling when we come in, the cat don't bow his back no more. And we just think, "Oh man, we're about as powerful as there is." We know where the power comes from. We know that without that power, we're nothing. We know that. And how about that glory? You get glory and I get glory all the time. People come up and shake our hands and tell us we're doing a good job. I remember when I first come in, I I've been sober all day the day before, and I was still sober that day, but I had had a sleepless night, and I wasn't well enough to shake. I was quivering, and I could have threaded a sewing machine while it was running if I could have got coordinated. And this great big guy came up, and he looked at me, and he said, "Boy, you're doing a great job." And I said, "You crazy as hell. I'm dying. I'm going to die now. I ain't going to wait till tomorrow." He said, "No." He said, "You're going to die. You died yesterday." He said, he looked at me, and I'm sitting there looking at this great big fella, and he said, "I love you." I said, "I'm married." See, I didn't understand that universal love. Takes a while. Takes a while. Glory. We get that glory now all the time. People pat us on the back. People shake our hands. But when we receive that glory, you know where it goes. It goes to that place from whence it came. That house not built with hands. Eternal in the heavens. We know these things now, and we know who to thank for the clothes we have on, for a nice clean place to bathe, for money in our pockets to rattle, for an Alcoholics Anonymous group to come to, and this beautiful church that's comfortable. Comfortable seat, nice ceiling fan. Smoke don't even bother us too much here. Yes, we are recipients of God's grace. And you know what the word grace means? Unmerited reward. We didn't earn the grace that God has given us. We're trying, to the best of our ability, to pay back God for what He has already given us. But I got news for you. There's a thing in the Bible that says, "Cast your bread upon the water, and it shall be returned tenfold." I remember when I first heard that, I said, "That's great if you like soggy bread." But that's not what that means. You do something, and you get 10 times as much in return. That's God's grace. I'm 76 years old, and a doctor told me when I was 21 that if I didn't drink anymore for 6 months, I'd have 6 more months of life. I went out and got drunk, stayed drunk for 6 months. Went back into his office, said, "Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about." He sent me a bill. I stayed sober 6 months. He gave me 6 months to live. I went in and told him I couldn't pay it. He gave me another 6 months to live. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. Whenever we receive these compliments, this is glory. And don't ever stop doing it. Don't ever stop patting folks on the back. Don't ever stop shaking hands. Don't ever stop telling folks they're doing a good job. But we were supposed to have died. 19 out of every 20, too. That's only 5%, according to the latest statistics I've heard. They not only just go out and get drunk, they die. Only 5% of us. We're God's chosen people. The Jews usually refer to themselves as God's chosen people. The first 12 steps I ever made in my life, I was up in the club room and phone rang, and a guy, there was nobody there but me and another fella, and I just had 2 teeth. One up here and one down here. They didn't match. And I was foolish enough to think that one top tooth was a social advantage. To this day, I think maybe it is. Because there ain't no way in the world that you can grin at somebody with just one tooth and they don't grin back. Well, this man said, Charlie, there's a 12-step call, and I want you to make it. I can't go. You and I are the only ones here. He gave me car fare to go out in Arlington, Virginia. It was a great, big, beautiful mansion. Manicured lawn and lovely trees and everything painted up and beautiful. And the door was carved, big oak door with a great lion on its door with a ring on its mouth. I looked at that and I said, my God, that door cost more than all the houses I ever lived in Arkansas. And I pulled that knocker back and let it go. Whack, 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 whack. And this woman come to the door. She was bedraggled. Her hair looked like a bed, never had been made up. And both eyes trying to get in the same socket. And I said, great. Say, I really run into something here. I said, I'm Charlie Lindenwood. I was sent out here by AA. She said, he's upstairs. I said, great, day in the morning. What am I going to see when I get upstairs? And there sat a little man, and he was sitting in a leather chair, and either arm had dropped off of that chair hit a bottle. It didn't make any difference which arm. There was a bottle of booze there. I mean, high-grade whiskey. And I looked at that, and I said, man, that's living. And I went over and looked in his eyes, and there ain't nobody home. And I talked to him for a while, and I realized that I wasn't getting through to him. And he hit a little thing on that chair, and it dumped him right out in the floor, and he was knee-walking to the bathroom. And he was going, his wife right alongside of him, she looked worse than him, saying, look at that. Now, isn't that nice? There, just look at that. And he was going, got to the toilet, chinned himself on that commode, and he had the limber neck. And I had to hold his head to keep him from drowning. And he still going, dry heave, nothing coming up. Finally, I got exasperated. I said, do you realize that you're one of God's chosen people? He said, I wish he hadn't chosen me. Now, I got that man back to his chair, knowing that he was going to die. You see, every drunk that I ever associated with at my economical level, once we got drunk, we'd get arrested and we'd be kept in either jail or in some psychiatric ward, because that's all they had for drunks in those days. When we get out, our health would be returned. One of the drunks' worst enemies is health. Because you get thinking, man, I can drink now. And you almost die again and again and again. And here this man wasn't going to have that opportunity to be locked up and get so that he could eat and drink something that would be good for him and become healthy again. Because he had all the money in the world, and all he had to do was have it sent in by the case. I knew I'd talk to a man that was going to die, and I wanted to say to him, I looked at myself. I still had on relievers for clothes. I discarded my underwear for obvious reasons. Didn't have but two teeth. And they told me to say something that you heard said to you here when you get out there. And I couldn't say it. I wanted to say, if you want what I've got and are willing to go to any length to get it, then we are ready to take certain steps. No way. No way in the world I could say that. Him in his position, me in mine. But now, I'll tell you, I wish to God I had said that to that man, because I had something that could have saved his life, sobriety. And if I had it to do over, I would say to him, if you want what I've got and are willing to go to any length to get it, then we are ready to take certain steps. I never fail to say that to anybody that I make a 12-step call on, because it's true. All we're selling is sobriety, nothing else. We're selling serenity, peace of mind, and love. Love that only we can understand, and only we can accept from people that understand us. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. The 11th part of the Lord's Prayer is, you know, you've been asked, how long you have to go to those meetings? How long do you have to attend those meetings? It's right here, forever and ever. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. The 11th part is forever and ever. And the 12th part of the Lord's Prayer is, amen. And I thought that meant like the end. But the word amen means, so be it. And so may it be that you and I will always continue to be meeting in these meetings forever and ever. God bless you.
Thank you, Charlie. I have heard you on many occasions, and I have heard your tape, and I get a good message every time I hear from you.